We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Schwarber with his home run, that gives him 24 on the season through the first 81 team games, which is the fourth most ever for the Phillies in the last 50 years. Here he blasts one deep down the right field line. If it's fair, it's gone, and it is gone into the second deck, right down the line. Kyle Schwarber with his 25th home run of the season. Bombs away for Kyle Schwarber, and the Phillies now lead it 2-0.
Well, that was a really cool moment in the game yesterday, not just because it was his second home run in two at-bats, but also because it was just a shot. And honest to God, he almost looked surprised that it went out. I mean, he didn't initially. I don't know if he thought it was going to be a foul ball or what, but it. I mean, even
things were carrying last night. It seemed
it was a bomb.
Center field.
This guy's power, man.
Oh,
I was
yeah.
I was talking about this morning. I was trying to figure out. Like, I think in our lifetime, it's like a couple dudes in Philly. It's like Howard,
yep.
Tomey, Incaviglia. I'm a little young for Luzinski in terms of just effortless power. This guy might be the top. He might have the most effortless power I've ever seen from a Philly in my lifetime.
Well,
it's Tomey, I think.
It's all about the torque at the very end. I don't even know what you
his
call
hand,
it.
He has amazing
the
hands.
Hand
he has amazing
the
hands.
The hand just like flick.
Yeah, it's
at the end of that swing.
It is remarkable
and it's so
power.
So quick.
I don't know if you guys notice this. So two things. Last night during the game, Bull was not interviewed, but they showed Bull sitting at Bull's barbecue, sitting next to Dickie
yeah.
Knowles. His forearms are still massive. And I say that to say this. Did you guys see the photograph going around social media a couple days ago of Alec Bohm and other players on the beach? Alec Bohm, his chest looked like my chest. I'm like, this guy, I'm like, now I understand why he only has
why
a couple
drive
home runs.
The ball, right?
I mean, Greg Luzinski is probably 60, 65 years old. He is more physically impressive than Alec Bohm, who's about 25. So someone please get Alec Bohm in the weight room because he should be hitting more home runs.
Well, it does
just
make a difference.
I noticed the photograph on social media. I mean, it was cool. He's playing wiffle ball with fans on the beach. It was him and a couple of the other players, and that's good stuff. But contained within the story, I'm looking at it, I'm like, man, this guy needs to put on weight. So to your point about Schwarber, I mean – There's natural strength.
I don't know how all of that works with baseball and weight training, strength training, conditioning, all that
yeah.
stuff.
Just find that photo of Bohm. I want you to see that
football.
Find that picture of Bohm because I'll be struck, John, if you agree with me. Like, wow, he's a third baseman in baseball? 215-592-9494. One phone call, and then we'll get to the Brett Brown audio. Let's go to Tom in Abington right now. Yo, Tom.
Yo, fellas. How we doing today?
Doing great, Tom.
Yeah, so Joe, I found a perfect gift for you for your 200th hammer win.
Oh, talk to me. What is it?
It was John's factoid yesterday. It's called the Tree of Death.
I heard it. I had to make sure the show got off to a good enough start for my liking. I heard it.
I love you, Joe. Love you.
Thank you.
Let me ask you guys a quick question here. It might not be a quick question. Who's the worst draft pick, Mickey Moniak or Markelle Fultz?
Well, I think Fultz will do more in the NBA than Mickey Moniak. I also think it is harder to mess up the first pick in basketball than the first pick in baseball.
Mm.
So I would tell you the answer is Fultz is a worse pick, even though he will have a better career, because it's easier in basketball to identify someone to believe in.
Mm.
Baseball is a little bit more of a crapshoot.
That makes sense. Oh, and by the way, I my place is in Ventnor. We barbecue on the beach every holiday down
so
there.
So you were there 2 days ago?
No, well, this past one I couldn't make it, but usually
so,
every
right.
holiday.
But just
yes.
to be clear, when you said every holiday, you're an actor.
I'm just making it clear to you that every holiday you're allowed to barbecue on the beach.
I got
now,
you. I'm playing around.
And it's an exception to the rule, but you guys said, well, it would be pretty safe to barbecue on the beach. Like, you guys have met people, right? Like, people are generally stupid and do stupid things, right?
That's true. I saw it when the firework people came out. Holy mackerel. Yeah, I'm like, yeah, what is going on? This one guy was like, it was like a gun. He was like shooting fireworks toward the ocean. I'm thinking, dude, you better keep pointing them that way. Don't point it to me. That's going to be a big problem.
Right. So if you're going to make an exception to the rule, you're going to do it when the most people are there, not on just some random Wednesday.
Yeah.
Like you
said. All right.
You know what I mean?
That makes some sense. Yep. That makes some sense.
And the Phillies should bye, like starting pitching for sure. Like who are you trying to hold on to in our farm system here, Jeff?
Whoever the people say are good. I mean, I don't know. They're all down in the lower levels. Obviously, I haven't seen him, but you hear that there's three or four prospects that are pretty solid, and it's the concept, Tom. Without me being able to give you a scouting report, you know, I'm not following Painter in his minor league exploits, but the idea of someone that people that know more than me about the minor league system says, "Hey, this guy's got a shot to be pretty darn good."
But do
if
they
I know,
know
he's
more
under,
than you?
If, say it again.
Do they know more than you?
I don't know.
Look at the track record, man.
Yeah.
I mean, look at the pitching that's come out of our farm system.
I know.
It's terrible, man. I say get rid of whoever you have to, man. This is your shot.
But you are glad you didn't trade Aaron Nola 7 years ago, right? Come on.
That's what we would have gotten back.
Probably nothing that would have pushed him over to playoffs those years. Tom,
well,
give me an answer here.
Years.
A great achievement in pop culture. What do you have?
I'll give you guys the only show to get higher ratings than the Super Bowl. That would be the final episode of MASH.
Yeah, MASH was a big deal there at the end, and it was certainly a cultural phenomenon. I mean, the reality, there weren't many stations back then, so it was easier to get higher ratings. That was a big part of it.
All right. Saw this picture, Joe.
Yes, talk to me. Brett, Alec Boehm.
You're saying you look like Alec Boehm.
Tongue in cheek. What I'm saying is Alec Boehm does not look like a starting third baseman upper body was.
I think he's better than you give him credit.
I don't know.
Garrett
man.
Stubbs looks like he might have some issues.
Let
I mean, we
this.
Knew Garrett Stubbs was little. Man, Stubbsy does not look like a professional athlete. I would say Alec Boehm does. I would say Mickey Moniak does look the part. But Stubbs, holy cow.
It is a holy cow, especially for a catcher.
Oh, my God.
Especially for a catcher.
He's as tall. First of all, he's as tall as, like, the children that they're standing with. And then, oh, boy. No, but I think Boehm looks like he's got more mass than I would have expected. He's a pretty tall guy.
But not impressive.
Okay. No,
not
he doesn't
impressive.
Look like a bodybuilder,
Hit
but
the
he
weight
looks like an athlete.
But part of my point is how few home runs he has. And look, he played a good game last night. I mean, it was really good to see him get some RBI singles. That was good stuff. But, you know, it's funny. For all the power we talk about on this team, it's really only concentrated in a couple guys. It's really Bryce Harper, Schwarber, and Hoskins.
Yeah.
Right? Is there anyone else that's even?
Well, Derek Hall now.
Well, Derek Hall now, but I mean, he's been up here, you know, 2 minutes.
Right.
You know, 215-592-9494. All right, let's get to the audio of Brett Brown. So we talked to Spike Eskin, the Rights to Ricky Sanchez podcast. And now my understanding, based on what Angela said this morning, is that the Ben Simmons topic was apparently off limits. So I guess as a precondition of the interview, Brett Brown did not want to talk about Ben, and it sounds like, based on the way Angela presented it today, that Spike was then like, all right, fine, no Ben. Ben was touched upon, but it wasn't like a direct sink your battleship, you know, Ben Simmons situation, which you really – that would have been probably the main thing we'd all like to have heard. But they do cover other ground, including just Brett Brown talking on the record for the first time since being fired – after the Sixers got eliminated in the bubble. Here's Brett Brown on waiting till now to talk.
Purposefully, I went underground. And, you know, our days in Philadelphia, it took its toll. And as I'm driving in my Jeep, pick a number, 50 times back and forth from Philly to, you know, to Portland, Maine, you can't help but, you know, reflect on things and good and the bad. And there were literally times I'd have to pull over and say, you know, what was I thinking? You know, if you had to do it again, you know, what would you do?
Now that's a fascinating one there at the end,
Jeez.
John. What was I thinking? Let me ask you a question.
So
what do you think,
he's living in Portland, Maine?
Well, he lived here, but he's from that area. So I guess he was, you know,
just
maybe
business,
maybe he's got
family,
a summer home
okay.
or something.
Yeah.
Just gut feeling. Of all the mistakes that were made, and there were a lot,
holy cow.
What do you think, James, what do you think when he pulls over and says to himself, what was I thinking? What do you think is his number one regret in that regard?
I think it's the been concessions across the board. Ben came in, decided he would play point guard for the 76ers, and Brett was complicit. There was no resistance. And just dealing with Ben, it felt like it was always it as you wish, Mr. Simmons.
So the kid gloves,
you know,
with
Ben. Put your foot down.
Yeah.
Put your foot down with this young player,
especially in the very beginning,
who should not be setting the, you know, the rules.
Yeah, I would tend to agree with you. James, you have a thought on something else, or do you think that's it?
I think that's it, but I think it's more than that. I think it goes to choosing Jimmy Butler over Ben Simmons and the whole, you know, way it played out. I think it's the start, but I think it's really the end that he's lamenting in the moment.
I agree with both of you there. Let's
hear
more.
Butler thing's big.
Big. More from Brett Brown, because, you know, the end, it was a crash and burn, if you remember. They were without Ben, and maybe they could beat the Celtics. Probably not. Sixers were a 6 seed. Celtics were a 3 seed. There was no home court advantage because it was all happening in the bubble. Sixers got smoked in that series 4-0. Honest to God, it's a series a lot of us probably don't even much remember because it, like, started, it was over. I think they played a competitive, like, first or second game. By the third and fourth game, it wasn't even competitive. Sixers losing 4, and Brett Brown talked about the end of his tenure.
You know, and when I look back at my days, if I'm honest, you know, we all would agree that my time was up in Philadelphia when it was up. And I felt it, and the city felt it, you know, Joel, the players felt it. Time was up. And, you know, it's just part of life as a coach. And it's in the light of day, I can admit that.
Brett Brown,
I thought
there.
That was really interesting. Joel and the players felt it. What was the indicator to you that Joel was feeling that your time was up as a coach? Was Joel, I don't know, pushing back? Was Joel, I don't know. I would love to have that fleshed out a little bit.
Well, agreed. I mean, I'll say this. It was so obvious. If you remember, when they got together in the bubble and played and just didn't look very good. And to be clear, they didn't have Ben Simmons, who was their second best player, because Jimmy Butler wasn't on that team anymore. And this was before, I'd say, Tobias became a little bit better, which was then the next year. Ben was their second best player. He missed the playoffs. That was when he had that back injury. He was gone. So they really didn't have much of a shot. It was basically Joel Embiid and Tobias Harris versus the entire Boston Celtics team. I mean, you know, I think that was the year Shake Milton had kind of established himself a smidgen, but it was only a smidgen. Tyrese Maxey wasn't on the team yet. I mean, that Josh Richardson guy was not good. He just didn't have a very good team. So they got smoked, and I thought it was totally obvious that it was time for Brett to go. Now, he also talked, and one of the things about Brett Brown I like a lot, there's a human side to Brett. I mean, everyone's got a human side, but to me, there's a lot of humanity with him. Just the way he conducts himself, the way he talks. I've always been an admirer of Brett Brown, even when things got bad and he did not always do the best job coaching. Here he is. It's sort of a window into the human side of him after getting fired.
I did not pay much attention to the Sixers. You know, I would watch, obviously, and I still care. People can't hear that. I still care. Like, how can you not? You know, I love watching the growth of Joel Embiid and, you know, his maturity as a human being, and he's a father. Like, that's been a great sight to see. You know, watching other things has been difficult to watch.
What do you think he means there? Watching other things has been difficult. You think he's talking about the playoff failures? Watching other things has been difficult to watch. Ben?
Maybe the crash and burn of Ben.
Yeah, crash and burn of Ben. Probably the crash and burn of Ben, and probably the fact that the team. See, this is a weird
one. He wants the best for Ben Simmons. They go way back. I mean, he's known him since he was a child.
Right.
And to watch Ben self-destruct, it's not because of outside forces. This is Ben not choosing to change his game, to improve his game, and being sort of, I don't know, mollified while he's doing that. That's got to be frustrating.
Here's the other thing.
And
that,
to know that you're part of that. You're part of why that happened.
No doubt.
Because you gave in from the get-go.
The other aspect to me that always strikes me, it's not just him, but any of these sort of instances, the tug of war a human must feel between wanting to see people he cares about succeed and wanting to not see the person that replaces him succeed more than him. I mean, I'm buddies with someone that used to play in Philly sports. It was private conversations. So I'll leave the name out. But he told me when he was not on the team, he rooted against the team. And I'm talking about one of our own teams, and he's a beloved athlete around here. But when he was not on the local squad, he did not want the local squad to win, even though he was great friends with many people on the local squad. That's tricky, man. I mean, if WIP dumped me, if I find out later today, Joe, you're out, do I want WIP to succeed in my absence? I don't know. I want you to do good, John. James, I want you to do good. But would I want the person that comes in and replaces me to do better than me?
No.
Probably
not.
That's
where it changes.
Brett Brown got fired.
Yeah.
He got fired. So on one hand, you want to see Joel Embiid achieve all that he can achieve. On the other hand, you don't want Doc Rivers to come in and make you look like a fool.
Mm-hmm.
Which, by the way, I think to Brett Brown's credit, Doc Rivers has not made Brett Brown look like a fool. Doc Rivers got no further. Matter of fact, Brett Brown got further than Doc Rivers got because Brett Brown technically, he got to a game seven. That's a marginal difference.
Well,
game
Doc
seven,
got to game seven against the Hawks.
Oh, I'm sorry. Both game sevens. You're right. You're right.
But either way, also with Doc's comments, I think Brett Brown has become more endearing to us as fans with the off the field.
Well,
we always liked him.
I mean, we always liked
him. But even more so with the Doc stuff, it's become more like, I wish we had Brett Brown back.
So, look, you can react to any and all of this, you know, stuff with Brett Brown finally going on the record. One more piece of audio, and again, 215-592-9494. This one was very interesting because Brett Brown is clearly criticizing himself for not properly leading the Sixers. Listen to Brett Brown. We all know when you have Jimmy Butler on your team, it's going to lead to some contentious situations. He obviously is a difficult person, and I'm sure that played a big part in the Sixers not prioritizing having him on the team and going with Ben over Jimmy and all that sort of stuff. But Pat Riley has dealt with it, and Eric Spoelstra has dealt with it in Miami the last couple of years, and they've had a lot of success down there. They haven't won a title, but they've had more success than the Sixers. Brett Brown clearly bullseyes himself, Brett Brown, and not being enough of a leader in the Jimmy Butler situation. Listen to this. This was pretty interesting.
I always said that I'd rather be a coach than a leader. And, you know, I ended up not being the leader, if I'm truthful, that I needed to be, trying to connect the dots with Jimmy and Ben and Joel. It still haunts me.
I mean, John, they had a nucleus.
Wow.
And what he's saying is, as a leader, coach is a phrase, but leader is all-encompassing. As the leader trying to bring these three together, who, let's be real, from a talent standpoint, could have won a championship, whether it was the first year, the next year, the next year, the next year. I mean, if you keep those guys together, they certainly are talented enough to compete for a championship. And what he's saying is that he failed as a leader to keep them not just on the same team, to keep them together while on the same team, mm-hmm. so that they would want to stay together.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's a big admission right there.
Yeah, I think so. Well, you know, he's had 2 years to mull this over.
And to see Jimmy Butler do spectacular things in Miami. Like, Jimmy Butler will never be one of the five best players in the world. He's not that good. But Jimmy Butler has, for many years, been one of the top 15 players in the world. Frankly, I think he's taken his game even up a little higher. I think he's been one of the top 10 to 12 players over the last couple of years. He's got Miami to an NBA Finals, and he's got Miami to a Game 7 of Eastern Conference Final. That's a great achievement. And the Sixers had him. And Brett Brown basically saying in the podcast with Spike, I didn't figure out how to get the guys to work together.
Yeah. And he had a built-in bias, whether he wants to acknowledge it or not, you know, toward Ben, which that worked to his disadvantage, you know, that for whatever, from, you know, the history that he shared with Ben, it means that Ben was always in a different category than both Joel and Jimmy Butler.
Now,
and
to
that
be
made
fair,
things a lot more complicated.
Well, I agree. Ben was also a lot younger than Jimmy, so part of the reason they were leaning and choosing him is they just believed in a longer runway.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Ben Simmons is still pretty young. I don't know what he is, 26 maybe. So, bottom line is that some clear, honest talk there from
Brett. Stays in touch with Ben Simmons.
Yes, but I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know either.
But I would look.
I don't
put it
think
this way.
Ben Simmons would be the easiest person to stay in touch with.
Well, let me put it this way.
I don't think he's calling you back.
It's Ben Simmons' decision.
Yeah.
Because we know enough about Brett Brown to know he will try. He'll do the outreach.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's who I believe Brett Brown is. He's the outreach guy. It's just a matter of would Ben Simmons then reciprocate?
Right.
I don't know. 215-592-9494. You want to react to any of that, please do so. Bob in Pennsauken's with us. Hi, Bob.
Yo, guys. How you doing?
Doing well, Bob.
First of all, Brett Brown, I think, was just here, like the book said, for 2 years of them bad years because he's a good guy. The press will like him when the team really stunk. I think the plan was to keep Brown for 2 years, then when the team got better, fire him. But for some reason, he stayed for, what, 5 years, 6 years?
Well, part of the reason he stayed for, I think it was 6 years, they didn't try to win for 4 years. So there was, I mean, what are you going to fire?
Exactly.
Like, yeah, they didn't try to
that's
win.
That's why they, yeah, I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, matter of fact, he might have stayed for seven because I think they tanked for four, then they lost to the Celtics, then they lost to the Raptors, then they lost to the Celtics. I believe he was the Sixers coach for seven seasons.
But if you remember what Hinkley wrote in his book, saying that he hired Brown to deal with the press because he's a likable coach. The team was going to tank so bad.
Well, it's a smart move. Yeah. Well,
exactly.
Yeah. If you're gonna intentionally lose, you better have a front man that can at least
exactly.
mollify people a bit publicly. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, Moniak.
Yep.
I was a fan for the last 3 years. Okay. I still haven't think he has a great chance yet. I mean, the guy plays two straight games. He has a bad game. He's benched. He bats twice. They pitch hit for him. Why not just say to him, here's a month. We'll give you 30 days just to
Bob, I have such an easy explanation. You want the answer? You ready?
Why? He stinks. He stinks, right?
No, not even because he stinks.
Okay, why?
Because they're trying to make the playoffs.
But we got Odubel, and we know what he
Yeah, but Odubel is better. Bob,
Odubel's just a lot more productive.
He really
is. And with Mickey Moniak, it really does. It's eerie how it always turns out exactly the same every at-bat.
Okay,
I can't remember an at-bat. Do you remember an at-bat that Mickey Moniak has been up and he hasn't been 0-2?
Well, I don't remember.
He swings. He swings at the first pitch because if it's not a curveball, he's thinking, okay, this is going to be my only chance. He swings at it. It probably fouls it off. Then they'll throw him a curveball. He'll miss or he won't swing because he can't hit it. And he's in a hole. He digs that hole every single time. And that's been consistent. That's the only thing that's been consistent.
But do you think it's his confidence? Because he knows if he fails in two straight games, he's done. He's sent back down again. He hasn't got a real, real chance.
Yeah, but
I think that's part of it.
But
that's the truth of pro athletics.
I understand that. What I'm saying to do is let him bat against righties and Veerling bat against lefties and get rid of Odubel. We know what he does every game.
I just disagree with you, Bob. I'm just telling you, if Moniak was playing for the Pittsburgh Pirates, he could be the center fielder for the next 3 months, and you just find out. But he's playing on a team trying to make the playoffs. I just don't like your approach with it because of
– I think we have enough talent to hide him is what I'm saying.
And I don't agree with that is exactly what I'm saying.
I think he'll lose his games.
I did too. I think he would lose the games.
Well, he made a great catch last night.
He did. That was
know.
That was a great play. Bob,
exactly.
give me a pop culture achievement in the last 50 years.
I'm fast, guys. I appreciate it. You had a great show, guys.
All right, buddy. Bob, appreciate the phone call, man. 215-592-9494. Look, I get the play Mickey Moniak concept when you have a bad team or you have an average team and the teams are running away with a playoff spot. The Phillies have a slightly above average team. They have a shot to be very good if guys get healthy and stay healthy. You're trying to make the playoffs. I mean, you know, the reason Kevin Stocker played like the final 90 games of the 93 Phils was because he played really good. If Kevin Stocker played bad in 93, they would have tried to cycle to someone else. You don't want to try to shoot for the World Series with someone who can't play. Kevin Stocker, I think, hit 323 as a rookie in 93, and they kept playing him. Why? Because he played really good. 215-592-9494. Coming up, what Bryce Harper said, if you missed it. Bryce Harper on the record yesterday about his injury, prognosis moving forward. What Bryce said, you'll hear it next. Joe DeCameron, John Ritchie on WIP.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.